Hello, it's Monday, May the 17th. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is The Daily Show coming, as ever, from the Daily Mail newsroom. Well, as Britain's all opening up, we can now have sparcations all over again. I'm talking to one of our star writers about what she got up to when she was in one. Holiday confusion. Yes, we can go abroad, but the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, says, please don't. Why? What's the problem? Lockdown lifting. Finally, we can go into pubs. Inside, just as well, because it's freezing, sitting outside. But first, the Indian variant is now a cause, according to the government, of great concern. So why on earth did it take them so long to put flights from India on the red list? The new Indian COVID variant spreads faster and will become the dominant one in the UK. That's according to the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. But he insists that the existing vaccines will overcome it. Analysis by Oxford University suggests the jabs will prevent serious illness and death. And Matt Hancock has urged people to come forward to get vaccinated to prevent the variant spreading, as he says, like wildfire among the unvaccinated groups. I'm joined now by Jonathan Ball, who's Professor of Molecular Virology at the University of Nottingham. Professor Ball, we could have a long discussion about if this is going to become the dominant variant in Britain, why it took the government so long to deal with flights coming in from India. Some suggestion that 20,000 people came in the 4 days or so from when it was announced that India was going on the red list.
Although I think it's a bit of a red herring. We have to be careful about assuming that variants come in from one particular location. So we know we're calling this variant the Indian variant. What that essentially means is that's pretty much where it was first spotted. But that doesn't mean that's the only place that it's circulating. And the reality is that lots of different variants, including the so-called Indian variant, will be circulating in different parts of the world. And in a country like us with fairly permeable borders, if you think about the amount of traffic that goes across the channel, for example, then unfortunately it's likely that these viruses will find their way into the UK and start to circulate anyway. So whilst I agree that we need to have some kind of control or limitation of importation of viruses, it is a very tricky thing to do.
And we have to get used to, don't we, the fact, Professor, that this virus mutates and will mutate regularly, and there will be other variants. We've had the South African one, we've had the Kent one, now we've got the Indian one. Maybe in a few weeks, months' time, there'll be another one.
Undoubtedly, this is a virus that, while ever it's circulating in humans, it's likely to further evolve and mutate. Some of those mutations will be have no impact and effect on the virus. Some of them may well give the virus an advantage. I think that the main thing that scientists are worried about at the moment is the fact that only a small proportion of the population, it's just over a third, I think, at the moment, who've had both vaccines, so have optimum amounts of immunity. The rest of the population have either been exposed or had one vaccine dose or no doses at all. And it's in those people that the virus is most likely to start to circulate. And if it's circulating freely in people who've had a single dose of vaccine and have some immunity, then that may well drive the further evolution of the virus to pick up resistance to some of the immunity that the vaccines offer. And of course, that's the key thing here. While ever the vaccines continue to protect, then we're okay. But if we start to see viruses emerging that are more resistant to the vaccines, and in particular don't protect from serious disease, then that's a problem. But thankfully, at the moment, we don't think we're at that point.
It's encouraging too, isn't it, Professor, that for instance, in Bolton, which is called one of the hotspots for the Indian variant, nobody has died in hospital from COVID since April the 24th. And in fact, there are very few people who've been hospitalised full stop because of the variant. So while it may be more transmissible, it's not perhaps necessarily more lethal.
No, I think that's safe to say. At the moment, the evidence points towards the fact that it isn't associated with more serious disease. And indeed, we were hearing reports that maybe the variant that was first noticed in Kent that might potentially be more dangerous. The evidence for that isn't so clear cut. So at the moment, the variants that we've seen don't seem to be more dangerous. They certainly, some of them have a reduced sensitivity to the vaccine. So, for example, the virus that was first spotted in South Africa or recorded there, we know that that's less sensitive to antibodies produced by vaccines. But so far, none of them are more dangerous. And that's really important because, you know, it's hospitalizations that we're trying to stop. We're trying to prevent the NHS from becoming swamped with COVID cases.
Could I ask you too, is there an upside to this variant in that there were pictures in all the newspapers this morning of people queuing in Bolton to have their vaccinations, particularly people from the Asian community, which has been somewhat resistant to being inoculated? So perhaps the arrival of a variant known as the Indian variant is encouraging people from the Asian community to now enrol for the vaccination.
Yeah, I think any kind of measures that increase and improve vaccine uptake are important. And we know that there are a variety of different barriers to why people aren't getting vaccinated. It's quite complex. It's very easy for us, for example, to blame the kind of anti-vax movement for, you know, that's why people aren't getting vaccinated. But it is far more complicated than that. They may have caring responsibilities, for example. There may be a whole series of underlying issues and problems that are preventing or making it difficult for people to get vaccinated. And I think one of the things that we've done really well in this country is roll out vaccines. And so I think the more, you know, the more innovative we can be in terms of getting vaccines out to people where they're needed. So, for example, mobile vaccine centres, all of these things are a great idea to try and increase, because it's vaccines that are going to protect us and it's vaccines that are going to get us back to full normality.
Let's hope so. That's Jonathan Ball, who's Professor of Molecular Virology at the University of Nottingham. Thanks for joining us. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our podcast and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. So finally from today, pubs, restaurants and cafes in England at least can serve customers indoors, cinemas and hotels, they can also reopen. In Scotland, pubs and restaurants are open except in Glasgow and Murray, but alcohol can only be served indoors until 10:30 p.m. Wales has seen pubs and restaurants reopen, but with indoor socialising restricted to extended households. Northern Ireland's reviewing its own lockdown restrictions on May the 20th. The Prime Minister's urged families to adopt a heavy dose of caution when enjoying these newfound freedoms. I'm joined now by Tim Foster, owner of Yummy Pubs, who's a veteran of this podcast. And it's great to have you back on board, Tim. It's getting there slowly but surely. You're open now. People can go indoors, but you're still socially distanced, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to still be here. A year ago, we didn't think this was going to be a conversation that's going to carry on going. So we reopen again. And indoors now. So people are not having to just choose to be outside in the freezing cold, but able to come indoors too, which they're definitely doing today.
What bad luck as well, wasn't it, that when we could go outside, we had one of the coldest spells in living memory?
Oh, yeah, you couldn't make it up, could you? So people have just been, they have been absolutely incredible, and the support has been phenomenal. So we had an incredible 2 weeks reopening, and then the last 2 weeks have been a bit of a challenge, but still, you know, just to be able to open and trade has been great, and people coming down and not last minute cancelling on us, which the industry's been urging for, and just asking people, if you decide just not to do it, just give us a quick call, and they've definitely been doing that. It's been a fantastic response.
Has there been a temptation for some of you, Tim, to say to people, if they book a table, we're going to take a deposit, because cancellations are just so unacceptable after the year you've had?
Yeah, we are doing that. So we do that on a Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
We haven't had any pushback, so we definitely had some issues with either people double booking, or their events changing, or their circumstances changing and letting us down at the very last minute. So we weren't able to fill the tables and have people that were walking in be able to seat them, because we were expecting somebody to come in an hour's time or an hour and a half time, and then they just didn't show up. So we definitely had that initially, as kind of everybody was coming back and getting started. And then we basically adopted the same policy that we have for Christmas. So we do it for Christmas. It's fully automated. It doesn't get in the way of you being able to book, and it's not a time-consuming thing to do. So we've done it as a precaution and had no negative feedback from the customers about doing it currently.
Quite right. And Tim, if I was in your pub, and trust me, I'm going to be in one of yours quite soon, would I have to wear a mask to go to the bar to order a drink? Can I order at the bar? Have I still got to sit at a table and wait for someone to come to me?
Still got to sit at a table and wait for somebody to come to you. So we're still doing full service. When you come into the building, you have to wear a mask. Then when you're seated, you can take the masks off. So my team are all currently fully decked in masks, as are we, which hopefully come the 21st of June, we can abandon. All of the focus is on that now. So this is just another stepping stone for us towards an element of normality and getting everybody open and trading and getting people coming out and getting familiar and used to being out again. And then all of our focus has got to be on getting these restrictions lifted for the 21st of June so we can get back to doing what we do.
And, you know, there's been a lot of noises off from the Prime Minister and the Health Secretary warning June 21st isn't set in concrete. But for you, that is the real game changer, isn't it?
It's massively, yeah. It's a huge... This at the minute, we're all trading and, you know, we've got money coming in, but none of us are making any money. So we've all had huge hits to take. And I know I'm standing at one of the places, probably only in the top 100, that would have been making any money for the last month because of the outside work that we did and the sheer volume of people we've had through the venue, but the rest of the industry just hasn't. So we need to get the restrictions lifted. We need to get back to normality of how we can operate. It's so difficult to operate how we are within the pub world. We've just got to try and focus everything we can to get there. So I know it's really difficult for him, and I know there's difficult decisions coming, and at least the noise for us is getting slightly better. We seem to be being treated a little bit better than we were before. And they're talking about giving us some timings around the 14th, I understood, in the car today. So hopefully we can start, you know, kind of building some momentum and planning towards that, because, yeah, we've all got to get back to that. Restrictions removed and operate and just trade. It was hard enough before operating in this environment within hospitality, and it's been a bloody nightmare right now. So it's to try and get as many restrictions out of the way as we can.
Absolutely. Well, all the best, Tim. Tim Foster, owner of Yummy Pubs, and I'm glad to say he's still with us. Visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe, and then you can get access to all our podcast videos, opinion pieces, and much more. And if you want to get in touch, you tweet us at mailplus or me at toryboypierce. Travel bosses have unsurprisingly accused the government of instilling fear by warning people against going on holidays abroad. Ahead of the ban on international travel finally being lifted today, the Health Secretary Matt Hancock said families should certainly not go on holiday to anywhere not on the official green list. Holidaymakers are allowed to go to places on the amber list, which includes most European countries, as long as they quarantine on return to the UK. I'm joined now by Paul Charles, who's Chief Executive at the PC Agency and has been campaigning to get summer holidays back up and running. Paul, one step forward, and it seems this with this government, two steps back. I just don't understand why they bother with an amber list if they say nobody should go to countries on the amber list.
Yes, Andrew. Normally you define a government like this and define the big C as conservative. But I think in this case, it's confusion. Essentially, this is a government at the moment that is sending out quite a few mixed messages. Rather than simply sticking to the plans for the roadmap as far as travel is concerned, opening up gradually, which I'm pleased to say they have done from today, but signalling that June the 21st onwards will be okay for overseas travel as well and enable the sector to recover. But one day they're positive, the next they're negative. They're tossing around the travel and tourism sector as if it's in a washing machine and just trying to work out, you know, how long it's going to take to recover and what's going to come out to dry.
And some of the countries on the green list, it's farcical, isn't it? Australia and New Zealand, who aren't allowing anybody in anyway. The Falkland Islands were the best will in the world, and I was thrilled that Margaret Thatcher sent the task force to liberate the Falklands, but I can't see many people wanting to travel 8,000 miles to go on holiday there.
Well, and you can add the South Sandwich Islands, which doesn't even have a runway. So there are 12 destinations on there, which is a start, but it should have been bigger. There are many reasons why so many more countries could have been on that list. You can look at the Caribbean islands like Grenada, for example, where they have zero infection. So there's every reason why they should have been on the list. And politically, the government chose not to do that because they really don't want many people to travel at the moment. And of course, that lack of a boost from the government is not helping the sector to recover. Yes, it's great that we've got Portugal open today. Fantastic destination. 3,000 to 5,000 people have flown out there today and will do tomorrow. but it's not enough to help the sector really get going again. And that's why we need more clarity urgently.
We can't all go to Portugal.
No, we can't. We'd love to. Obviously, I'd love the whole of Britain to go to Portugal.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic place. But what you've got is a government that on the one hand is opening up overseas travel, but on the other is taking away by saying, well, we don't want you to travel to amber countries. It is safe to travel. It's not illegal to travel to any country as long as they'll have us in. I mean, obviously, there are rules and restrictions in place in lots of countries, but you can get in. In fact, if you look at Germany, for example, they're letting their fully jabbed citizens travel to anywhere. So why aren't we letting our fully jabbed, better protected citizens travel to anywhere?
Indeed. And what if, as and when this confusion and mixed messaging stops and people do start travelling abroad on holiday, and good luck to them for that, are you confident that the government have got it right at the airports? Because we've already seen enormous queues, hours long, and airports are running only at 5% capacity, particularly I'm thinking of Heathrow.
I think the reason why the government is trying to restrain travel at the moment is because they haven't put enough resource into Border Force.
Right.
And they haven't thought through the extra numbers who are going to be coming through very soon back into Heathrow and other airports as airlines open up and travel opens up more widely. So I think they just haven't got enough resource, which is why they're trying to keep a lid on travel. But they're never going to help the sector recover fully if they don't put more confidence into people booking and say more positive words. And I think they've really got to get a grip now as a cabinet, be united, enable overseas travel to open up safely and responsibly, and make sure that they've got the right resources in place. But at the moment, they seem all over the place, and it's no wonder that people are holding back their bookings.
And just finally, Paul, we know that a certain visitor is due to come to Britain in the first or second week in June for the G7 summit. That's the President of the United States. So they're going to have to jolly well expand that green list pretty soon, or otherwise the entire presidential delegation won't be coming.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to bring an entourage of 100 people with him. There may be an exemption, of course, under the international summit rule that the government has, where they do allow people to come in for major summits and not self-isolate for so long. But in the reality is, I don't think Joe Biden will want to come to the UK without having opened up the US-UK vital corridor that we all want to see. So I would expect them to open that up. Some people are calling it the Disney dividend. President Biden opening up that vital link well before he arrives on June the 11th. And I'm pretty certain that we will have a UK-US open corridor, a green corridor, during June at some point.
Very good. And that's at least something positive to end on. That's Paul Charles, Chief Executive at the PC Agency. So, Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatt was here with the latest. Well, Leicester did it.
They certainly did.
What a great result. I'm really pleased because Chelsea are always winning things. And Leicester are sort of the underdogs, aren't they?
Well, that's absolutely right, yeah. They were the massive underdogs for this game. Well, not should I say massive. They were underdogs for this game. You know, everyone really expected Chelsea, who've been, you know, almost unbeatable under Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah.
And have obviously got to the Champions League final. Yeah, but you're right. You know, Chelsea have won loads of FA Cups. They were in the FA Cup final last year. Mm. For Leicester, they'd never won it. They'd been to four finals before, lost all four. 137-year-old club and never won the FA Cup final. And you could see what it meant to the team, to the players, to the fans, to the owner when they won it. Obviously, they've had some tragedy.
The previous owner was killed in a plane crash, wasn't
exactly,
he?
In a helicopter crash outside
so that
was
the ground. His son took over.
And that was his son who took over, and he was there. And he's, you know, a lot of the complaints about this Big Six when they tried the breakaway is these absent owners. So people like the Cronkies, who were never seen at the Arsenal ground, people like the Glazers, who were never seen at Old Trafford. Well, these are owners who are invested in the club, who care about the club, who attend these cup finals, who are close to the players and the manager, as you could see at the end when Brendan Rodgers gave him a massive hug. And it, you know, it means something to them. It's not just a cash cow.
Yeah. And how many people were in the Wembley for the match?
So there's 20,000 in there. Yeah. So you had 10,000 Leicester fans who were going loopy as well, and that was brilliant. You know, God, how we've missed that, seeing
I
fans
agree.
There and the players celebrating in front of the fans at the end.
And who gave them the cup? Because it's normally some celeb, isn't it? Or a royal or something? William, Prince William?
So it was William, wasn't it? Yeah, it was William who gave him the COVID. Yeah, he handed it over to him. Sorry, I just remembered it. I saw it at the end. I did watch it.
Yeah.
So that was great. And it was just, it was so pleasing to see a team, as I say, never
and
won it.
Did they deserve to win?
They scored an absolute cracker of a winning goal, which was scored by their midfielder Tielemans, who absolutely hit a rocket that shot into the top corner. Now, Chelsea then, at the other end, just with a couple of minutes to go, had a goal that was ruled out by VAR. So it was exciting at the end. It wasn't the greatest FA Cup final in terms of, goal mouth action and stuff. Did Leicester deserve to win it? Yeah, I'd say so. On the second half performance, their goalkeeper, Kasper Schmeichel, made a superb save as well in the closing stages to tip one round the post. So, yeah, I'd say Leicester deserved to win it all in all.
He's the son of another goalkeeper.
He's the son of Peter, the great Manchester United former goalie. So, yeah. But it was just a great story. It was a heartwarming. And obviously all the neutrals were on Leicester's side because Chelsea and their involvement in this failed European Super League, they were the boo boys and Leicester were the underdog heroes. So it was a great fairy tale story.
And your colleague Tim, sat in that seat on Friday, said Chelsea were going to win.
Well, there you go. You went to the wrong person for a prediction. If only you'd come to me.
Exactly. Now, Chelsea women hammered in Sweden. Is that surprising?
Well, this was the Champions League final. Oh. So the Women's Champions League final.
Oh, they lost to Barcelona.
4-0. It was a surprise in the manner of defeat. I think Barcelona are a very, very good side. They won the Spanish League easily. I don't think they lost a game. They barely conceded a goal, in fact, during their season. But that's as much to do with the quality of the opposition they played. Chelsea had beaten Bayern Munich, who were strong in the semi-final. So we thought it'd be close. I thought Barcelona were probably favourites. But Chelsea were walloped. They were 4-0 down after half an hour.
Good Lord.
Slightly unlucky early own goal. Then there was a penalty, which was quite soft, and then they scored two more. And then it was damage limitation. So in some ways, Chelsea played the second half, didn't get worse.
Because it could have been 7-0 or something.
Exactly. But, they'll learn from it. They'll go again. And they'll try and improve on that. And Emma Hayes, who's the manager, they won the league last week. They've won the League Cup, and they're trying to win the FA Cup. So they could still win a treble. So it still will have been a great season for them. But, they came unstuck in Sweden.
All right. Right. And just finally, Jofra injury worry. Now, he's a cricketer, but I've forgotten his first name.
That Jofra Archer.
Oh, Jofra Archer.
Who is that is his first name.
I do try.
I know you do. You do. England's premier fast bowler. Now, real worry because he's had this niggling elbow injury, which I think we've spoken about before.
Yeah.
He's tried to rest it. He's tried to come back and play at the weekend. It's just too painful for him. Now it looks like he's going to have surgery. This could rule him out for 10 weeks. And we need him. We need him for the Ashes at the end of the year. So we're desperate for him to get fit and to get on that Ashes, on the plane to the Ashes.
Well, got plenty of time,
he's got plenty of time, but it's just a worry. When you get these fast bowlers, and when their bodies break down so regularly, you do worry about whether he's got the durability. Now, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope the surgery sorts it all out and he goes on to have a long career. But, these things
can be...
They should play less cricket and then he'd be all right. But he's not playing very much cricket at all at the moment. So hopefully, if he has surgery, it sorts it out and he's on that plane so we can beat the Aussies. Because he is exactly the sort of player we need to win over there. Perfect bouncy pitches for him.
Which county team does he play for?
So he plays for Sussex.
Right.
And he doesn't play for them very often. And part of the reason he was playing for them over the last few days was to build his fitness up.
Right.
So that he might be ready for some of the early test matches this summer. England got a massive series against India this summer, 5 tests at home, and you want Jofra to be playing in that. And then they got a T20 World Cup where we'd want him available for that as well. So hopefully this period, we'll get him back and he can play some part this summer. But it's just a worry to think that this quick bowler isn't able to play as much cricket as we'd hope. So fingers crossed he makes a full recovery soon.
Fingers crossed for Jofra Archer.
Indeed, he does
there
the fella.
Are. Look at that. Deputy Sports Editor Matt Gatwood, continuing my education in the world of sport. Spas and beauty salons have finally reopened their doors this week, and no surprise, many of them are booked up right until the end of the year. Because let's be honest, it's been a tough year, particularly for women, especially those in their 40s and 50s who still have children at home and maybe looking after an elderly parent too, all because of this wretched pandemic. So revisiting a spa, it's a big moment, which is why the Daily Mail's Sarah Vine visited a very smart Knightsbridge spa, and she joins me now. Do you think it is fair to say, Sarah, that women of a certain vintage have had a pretty awful COVID?
That was very elegantly put.
Yes, I try.
Women of a certain vintage. Yes, I think it has been quite tricky for your old midlife sandwich woman. She's spread pretty thin, really, because it's just, you know, the children, the parents, the husband, everyone being at home, the job, the having to do everything. It's been quite... I mean, I do have friends who've had quite nice lockdowns, but they tend to be either... You know, friends my age, they tend to be single. All of the ones who are single or who didn't have children have actually had quite a nice time. They've been sort of doing a lot of reading and gardening and sort of cooking. Whereas all the ones I know who have got children, or and especially teenagers, have been very tricky. And also suddenly having your husband occupying the sort of kitchen table or spare room, if you've got one, whilst you're also simultaneously trying to do your job, has been quite difficult. Because as we know, Andrew, men's jobs are much more important.
Oh yes, of course,
than ladies' jobs. They really are. It's yeah. I don't think anyone quite understands the difference.
Yeah.
I think you know, it's very important that we remember that if you're a man, it's much harder working than it is if you're a woman.
Exactly, which is why it's so nice, actually, that you gals have managed to get into some spas. Now, tell me what treatment did you have, Sarah? And did they make you feel good?
I'm slightly grumpy about it because my lovely editor rang me up and said, would you like to go to spas? Which, of course, I said yes. What I didn't realise is that I would have to be photographed in a dressing gown, which is not something anyone ever wants to have happen to them, especially not when you're my age and my girth. Anyway, I did have a very nice massage. It was extremely nice. I'm not quite sure it was worth the picture and the pain of having the picture taken, if you know what I mean.
But it was quite a nice dressing gown.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful, beautiful, beautiful spa. And it was everyone was very lovely and the treatment was extremely nice. And it was, I have to say, very nice.
On my own. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, isn't there one of the great things about spa treatment? No children, no husband, no telephone, no Daily Mail saying, can you write 900 words? Just you and the masseurs.
Yep. And the sort of whale song or whatever it is that they put on. And just, I mean, basically I fell asleep and snored. I hope I didn't fart, but I couldn't be honest. I couldn't honestly tell you that.
No. And did you have any steam? Did you have any steam and stuff?
I did a bit of steam. I did a bit of jacuzzi work.
Yeah, nice.
Which was extremely nice. And a bit of sitting around the pool. They have a very nice pool there, which is sort of, it's a tropical temperature, and there's lots of little individual cabanas. And there's the best thing in the world, which is a little button that sits next to your lounger, so that if at any stage you require anything, you can just press the button, and then a person magically appears. It's brilliant. I think lots of women will be doing this. I have to say, before lockdown, I was a bit sort of, well, do I really need to go to spa? Can't I just achieve the same in my own bathroom? And I think, having done quite a lot of lockdown and having done quite a lot of trying to achieve the same in my own bathroom, I think we can all agree that I can't. Actually, there is a value in going to spa. Yeah.
And will you be going back? Because I think those massages are just the best, aren't they? They find bits of muscles you didn't know.
I can't possibly afford to go back to the Bulgari spa. It's £270 a pop.
Oh,
but,
was it?
I will definitely. It's just very nice. It is very, very nice. I mean, I think, you know, you are in the most incredible environment. I think that's the joy of it.
Yeah.
Apart from, the treatment's brilliant, but you're also paying, I think, to be in a beautiful luxury Knightsbridge basement. But yeah, I think I will start trying to do something, you know, maybe once.
It's sort of some me time, isn't it? And you could, I suppose, spend the whole afternoon there, couldn't you? I mean, they don't kick you out after.
You could. No, you absolutely could. They don't kick you out. And they're very, very nice. And the facilities are fabulous. I couldn't recommend them more, actually. They really are fantastic. And the pool is gorgeous and very warm. It's like a sort of warm bath. So, and, you know, you get that thing where, I don't know, I'm 54, so my joints ache a lot for no apparent reason. And that all disappears. It's, you know, like it's sort of when you walk out onto a nice warm beach and the sun just sort of warms your bones.
Remember that feeling.
Yeah.
That's a very nostalgic. That's a nostalgic feeling from a very long time ago. And would you go with a girlfriend, or is the joy of it going on your own?
I think the joy of it is going on your own.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, they do do. There's a big thing at the moment about couples spas. I sort of can't imagine anything worse. The whole point of going to spa is to get away from your partner. I suppose if you're in the first flush of your relationship. But it was very funny because they did give me this private suite. You can have a private spa suite, which is like a sort of, you know, walk-in wardrobe with a lovely bathroom, and then two side-by-side massage beds, and then your own jacuzzi, your own steam room, and then this rather sort of embarrassing double bed.
Oh, what's that about?
I can't imagine.
Oh, God.
I have no idea.
No. So you're not thinking of taking up that offer with your husband?
No.
That's a very firm no.
No. Actually, no. I mean, no, you want to be on your... The whole point is it's you on your own.
No, I agree.
You don't want to have to... You don't want to have to worry about whether your partner is happy or enjoying themselves or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly. And so that's Sarah Vine. We're quite sure that you were completely proper there, Sarah. And I'm quite sure when you received, you didn't, you know what, fart.
You can never tell, can you, when you're asleep?
Who knows? That's Sarah Vine. Read all about it. She doesn't like the photograph, but I think she looks great in a dressing gown in a spa in Knightsbridge, which was quite expensive. But nevertheless, it was very good for what it was. Sarah Vine, thanks for joining us. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.